Welcome. This is Signal. I have examined the maps of the city with the greatest care, yet never again found the Rue d'Auzay. These maps have not been modern maps alone, for I know that names change. I have, on the contrary, delved deeply into the antiquities of the place, and have personally explored every region of whatever name which could possibly answer to the street I knew as Rue d'Auzay. But despite all I have done, it remains a humiliating fact that I cannot find the house, the street, or even the locality where I, during the last months of my impoverished life as a student of metaphysics at the university, I heard the music of Eric Zahn. That my memory is broken, I do not wonder. For my health, physical and mental, was gravely disturbed throughout that period of my residence in the Rue d'Auzay, and I recall that I took none of my few acquaintances there. But that I cannot find the place again is both singular and perplexing, for it was within a half an hour's walk of the university, and was distinguished by peculiarities which could hardly be forgotten by anyone who had been there. I have never met a person who has seen Rue d'Auzay. Rue d'Auzay lay across a dark river, bordered by precipitous, brick-bleared windowed warehouses, and spanned a ponderous bridge of dark stone. It was always shadowy along that river, as if the smoke of the neighboring factories shut out the sun perpetually. The river was also odorous with evil stenches, which I have never smelt elsewhere, and which may someday help me find it, since I should recognize them at once. Beyond the bridge were narrow cobbled streets with rails, and then came the ascent, at first gradual, but incredibly steep, as the Rue d'Auzay was reached. I have never seen a street as narrow and steep as the Rue d'Auzay. It was almost a cliff closed to all vehicles, consisting in several places of flights of steps and ending at the top in a lofty ivied wall. Its paving was irregular, sometimes stone slabs and sometimes cobblestones, sometimes bare earth with struggling greenish-gray vegetation. The houses were tall, peak-roofed, incredibly old, and crazily leaning backward, forward, and sideways. Occasionally an opposite pair, both leaning forward, almost met across the street like an arch, and they most certainly kept most of the light from the ground below. There were a few overhead bridges from house to house across the street. The inhabitants of the street impressed me particularly. At first I thought it was because they were all silent and recalcitrant, but later I decided it was because they were all very old. I do not know how I came to live on such a street, but I know I was not myself when I moved there. I had been living in many poor places, always evicted for want of money, until at last I came to the tottering house in the Rue d'Auzay, kept by the paralytic Blandot. It was the third house from the top of the street, and by far the tallest of them all. My room was on the fifth story, the only inhabited room there, since the house was nearly empty. On the night I arrived, I heard strange music from the peaked garret overhead, and the next day I asked old Blandot about it. He told me it was an old German viol player, a strange dumb man who signed his name Eric Zahn and who played evenings in the cheap theater orchestra, adding that Zahn's desire to play at night after his return from the theater was the reason he had chosen this lofty and isolated garret room, whose singular gable window was the only point on the street from which one could look over the terminating wall at the declivity and panorama beyond. Thereafter, I heard Zahn play every night, and although he kept me awake, I was haunted by the weirdness of his music. Knowing little of the art myself, I was yet certain that none of his harmonies had any relation to music I had heard before. I concluded he was a composer of highly original genius. The longer I listened, the more I was fascinated, until after a week, I resolved to make the old man's acquaintance. One night, he was returning from his work. I intercepted Zahn in the hallway, and I told him I would like to know him and be with him when he played. He was a small, lean, bent person, with shabby clothes, blue eyes, grotesque, satyr-like face, and nearly bald head, and at my first words seemed both angered and frightened. My obvious friendliness, however, finally melted him, and he grudgingly motioned me to follow him up the dark, creaking, rickety attic stairs. His room, one of only two in the steeply pitched garret, was on the west side toward the wall that formed the upper end of the street. Its size was very great, and seemed the greater because of its extraordinary bareness and neglect. Of furniture, there was only a narrow iron bedstead, a dingy washstand, a small table, a large bookcase, an iron music rack, and three old-fashioned chairs. Sheets of music were piled in disorder about the door. The walls were bare boards and had probably never known plaster, whilst the abundance of dust and cobwebs made the place seem more deserted than inhabited. Evidently, Eric Zahn's world of beauty lay in some far cosmos of the imagination. Motioning me to sit down, the dumb man closed the door, turned the large wooden bolt, and lighted a candle to augment the one he had brought with him. He now removed his viol from its moth-eaten covering, and taking it, seated himself in the least uncomfortable of the chairs. He did not employ a music rack, but offering no choice and playing from memory, enchanted me for over an hour with strains I had never heard before. Strains which must have been of his own devising. To describe their exact nature is impossible for one unversed in music. They were a kind of fugue with recurrent passages of the most captivating quality. But to me, they were notable for the absence of any of the weird notes I had overheard from my room below on other occasions. Those haunting notes I had remembered and had often hummed and whistled inaccurately to myself. So when the player at length laid down his bow, I asked him if he would render some of them. As I began my request, the wrinkled satyr-like face lost its bored plasticity it had possessed during the playing and seemed to skew the same curious mixture of anger and fright which I had noticed when I first accosted the old man. For a moment, I was inclined to use persuasion, regarding rather lightly the whims of senility, and even tried to waken my host's weirder mood by whistling a few of the strands to which I had listened the night before. But I did not pursue this course for more than a moment, for when the dumb musician recognized the whistled air, his face grew suddenly distorted, with an expression wholly beyond analysis. His long, cold, bony right hand reached to stop my mouth and silenced the crude imitation. As he did this, he further demonstrated his eccentricity by casting a startled glance towards the lone curtained window, as if fearful of some intruder, a glance doubly absurd, since the garret stood high and inaccessible above all adjacent roofs. This window being the only point on the steep street, as the concierge had told me, from which one could see over the wall at the summit. The old man's glance brought Blandot's remark to mind, and with a certain capriciousness, I felt a wish to look out over the wide, dizzying panorama of the moonlit roofs and the city lights beyond the hilltop, which of all the dwellers in the Rue d'Auzay, only this crabbed musician could see. I moved towards the window, and I would have drawn aside the nondescript curtains, when with a frightened rage, even greater than before, the dumb lodger was upon me, this time motioning his head towards the door as he nervously strove to drag me hither with both hands. Now, thoroughly disgusted with my host, I ordered him to release me, and I told him that I would go at once. His clutch relaxed, and as he saw my disgust and offense, his own anger seemed to subside. He tightened his relaxing grip, but this time in a friendlier manner, forcing me into a chair, then, with an appearance of wistfulness, crossing to the littered table, he wrote many words with a pencil in the labored French of a foreigner. The note which he finally handed me was an appeal for tolerance and forgiveness. Zahn said that he was old, lonely, affected by strange fears and nervous disorders connected with his music and with other things. He had enjoyed my listening to his music and wished I would come again and not mind his eccentricities. But he could not play to another his weird harmonies, and he could not bear hearing them from another, nor could he bear having anything in his room touched by another. He had not known until our hallway conversation that I could hear his playing in my room, and he asked me if I would arrange with Blandot to take a lower room where I could not hear him in the night. He would, he wrote, defray the difference in rent. As I sat deciphering the execrable French, I felt more lenient toward the old man. He was a victim of physical and nervous suffering, as was I, and my metaphysical studies had taught me kindness. In the silence, there came a slight sound from the window. The shutter must have been rattled by the night wind, and for some reason I started almost as violently as Eric Zahn. When I finished reading, I shook my host by the hand and departed as a friend. The next day, Blandot gave me a more expensive room on the third floor, between the apartments of an aged moneylender and the room of a respectable upholsterer. There was no one on the fourth floor. It was not long before I found Zahn's eagerness for my company was not as great as it seemed while he was persuading me to move from the fifth story. He did not ask me to call on him, and when I did call, he appeared uneasy and played listlessly. This was always at night. In the day he slept and would admit no one. My liking for him did not grow, though the attic room and the weird music seemed to hold an odd fascination for me. I had a curious desire to look out that window, over the wall and down the unseen slope of the glittering roofs and spires, which must lay outspread there. Once, I went up to the garret during theater hours, when Zahn was away, but the door was locked. What I did succeed in doing was overhear the nocturnal playing of the dumb old man. At first, I would tiptoe up to my old fifth floor. Then I grew bold enough to climb the last creaking staircase to the peaked garret. There in the narrow hall, outside the bolted door, with a covered keyhole, I often heard sounds which filled me with undeniable dread. The dread of vague wonder and brooding mystery. It was not that the sounds were hideous, for they were not, but that they held vibrations suggesting nothing on this globe of earth, and that at certain intervals they assumed a symphonic quality which I could hardly conceive was produced by one player. Certainly Eric Zahn was a genius of wild power. As the weeks passed, the playing grew wilder, whilst the old musician acquired an increasing haggardness and furtiveness pitiful to behold. He now refused to admit me at any time and shunned me when we met on the stairs. Then one night, as I listened at the door, I heard the shrieking viol swell to a chaotic babble of sound, a pandemonium which would have led me to doubt my own shaking sanity had there not come from behind that barred portal a piteous proof that the horror was real, the awful, inarticulate cry which only a mute can utter and which rises only in moments of the most terrible fear and anguish. I knocked repeatedly at the door but received no response. Afterward, I waited in the black hallway, shivering with cold and fear, till I heard the poor musician's feeble effort to rise from the floor by the aid of a chair. Believing him just conscious after a fainting fit, I renewed my rapping, at the same time calling out my name reassuringly. I heard Zahn stumble to the window and close both shutter and sash. Then stumbled to the door, which he falteringly unfastened to admit me. This time his delight at having me present was real, for his distorted face gleamed with relief while he clutched at my coat as a child clutches at its mother's skirts. Shaking pathetically, the old man forced me into a chair whilst he sank into another, beside which his viol and bow lay carelessly on the floor. He sat for some time inactive, nodding oddly, but having a paradoxical suggestion of intense and frightening listening. Subsequently, he seemed to be satisfied, and crossing to a chair by the table, he wrote a brief note, handed it to me, and returned to the table, where he began to write rapidly and incessantly. The note implored me, in the name of mercy, and for the sake of my own curiosity, to wait where I was, while he prepared a full account in German of all the marvels and terrors which beset him. I waited, and the dumb man's pencil flew. It was perhaps an hour later, while I still waited, and while the old musician's feverishly written sheets still continued to pile up, that I saw Zahn start from a hint of a horrible shock. Unmistakably, he was looking at the curtained window, listening shudderingly. Then, I half fancied I heard a sound myself, though it was not a horrible sound, but rather an exquisitely low, infinitely distant musical note, suggesting a player in one of the neighboring houses or in some abode beyond the lofty wall over which I had never been able to look. Upon Zan, the effect was terrible. For dropping his pencil, he suddenly rose, seized his viol, and commenced to rend the night with the wildest playing I have ever heard from his bow, save when listening at the barred door. It would be useless to describe the playing of Eric Zahn on that dreadful night. It was more horrible than anything I had ever overheard, because I could now see the expression of his face and could realize that this time the motive was stark fear. He was making a noise to ward off something or drown something out. What? I could not imagine. Awesome, though I felt it must be. The playing grew fantastic, delirious, and hysterical, yet kept to the last the qualities of supreme genius, which I knew this strange old man possessed. I recognized the air. It was a wild Hungarian dance popular in theaters, and I reflected for a moment that this was the first time I had ever heard Zahn play the work of another composer. Louder and louder, wilder and wilder, mounted the shrieking and whining of that desperate viol. The player was dripping in uncanny perspiration and twisted like a monkey, always looking frantically at the curtained window. In his frenzied strains, I could almost see shadowy satyrs and bacchanals dancing and whirling insanely through seething abysses of clouds, smoke, and lightning. And then I thought I heard a shriller, steadier note that was not from a viol, a calm, deliberate, purposeful, mocking note from far away in the west. At this juncture, the shutter began to rattle in the howling night wind, which had sprung up outside as if to answer the mad playing within. Zan's screaming viol now outdid itself, emitting sounds I never thought a viol could emit. The shutter rattled more loudly, unfastened, and commenced slamming against the window. Then the glass broke shiveringly under the persistent impacts, and the chill wind rushed in, making the candle sputter and rustling the sheets of paper at the table where Zahn had begun to write his horrible secret. I looked at Zahn and saw that he was past conscious observation, his blue eyes bulging, glassy and sightless. The fanatic playing had become a blind, mechanical, unrecognizable orgy that no pen could ever suggest. A sudden gust, stronger than all the others, caught up the manuscript and bore it towards the window. I followed the sheets in desperation, but they were gone before I reached the demolished panes. Then I remembered my old wish to gaze from this window, the only window in the Rue d'Azay from which one might see the slope beyond the wall and the city outspread beneath. It was very dark, but the city's lights always burned, and I expected to see them there amidst the rain and wind. Yet when I looked from the highest of all the gabled windows, looked while the candles were sputtered and the insane viol howled in the night wind, I saw no city spread below, no friendly lights gleaming from remembered streets, but only the blackness of space, illimitable, unimagined space alive with motion and music, and having no semblance to anything on earth. And as I stood looking in terror, the wind blew out both candles in the ancient peaked garret, leaving me with savage, impenetrable darkness and chaos and pandemonium before me, and the demon madness of the night-baying viol behind me. I staggered back in the dark, without a means of striking a light, crashing against the table, overturning a chair, and finally groping my way to the place where the blackness screamed with shocking music. To save myself and Eric Zahn, I could at least try, whatever the powers posed to me. Once I thought some chill thing brushed me, and I screamed, but my scream could not be heard above the hideous viol. Suddenly out of the blackness, the madly sawing bow struck me, and I knew I was close to the player. I felt a head, touched the back of Zahn's chair, and then found and shook his shoulder in an effort to bring him to his senses. He did not respond, and still the viol shrieked without slacking. I moved my hand to his head, whose mechanical nodding I was able to stop, and shouted in his ear that we both must see from the unknown things of the night. He neither answered me nor abated the frenzy of his unutterable music. While all through the garret, strange currents of wind seemed to dance in the darkness and Babel. When my hand touched his ear, I shuddered, though I knew not why. I knew not why till I felt the still face, the ice-cold, stiffened, unbreathing face, whose glassy eyes bulged uselessly into the void. And then, by some miracle, finding the door and the large wooden bolt, I plunged wildly from the glassy-eyed thing in the dark, from the ghoulish howling of the accursed viol, whose fury increased as I plunged. Leaping, floating, flying down those endless stairs through the dark house, racing mindlessly into the narrow, steep, ancient street of steps and tottering houses. Clattering down steps over cobbles into lower streets and the putrid canyon-walled river, panting across the great dark bridge to the broader, healthier streets and boulevards we know. All these are terrible impressions that linger with me. And I recall there was no wind, and that the moon was out, and that all the lights of the city twinkled. Despite my most careful searches and investigations, I have never since been able to find the Rue d'Auzet. But I am not wholly sorry, either for this or for the loss of the unredeemable abysses of the closely written sheets, which alone could have explained the music of Eric Zahn.
Okay, are you ready? Okay.
Hi. I have a little co-host right now who is in desperate need of some cuddles. And I actually think probably a B-E-A-C-H day. Can't say some words out loud, like W-A-T-E-R or W-A-L-K. So this is our compromise. That story was H.P. Lovecraft's The Music of Eric Zahn. And it's one I especially like. I decided to be sneaky and let everyone know at the end of the podcast what the story was, because I didn't want people to read it in the title or at the beginning and think, oh, boring Lovecraft. Or I've heard that before. Next. I thought I just felt like tricking all of you, so congratulations, you've been tricked, I guess. Yay. Actually, my interest in H.P. Lovecraft started with a podcast, the H.P. Lovecraft Literary Podcast, and I believe I just made a note here, hosted by Chad Pfeiffer and Chris Lackey, and occasionally narrated by Andrew Lehman, which, oh, he's so good. Excellent narrator. Are you okay? Do you like his narration too? He's a good boy. I think they did about 160 episodes of Lovecraft. Everything. The terrible stuff. The half-finished stuff. The racist stuff. But at the end of the podcast, they also end up talking about Lovecraft and his life and what was going on during those times, if I remember correctly. And I really enjoyed it. I learned things I never would have even guessed, like HP was married, briefly, to a woman, and they both moved to New York to be a part of the literary scene there. And not surprisingly, Lovecraft hated it. So I'll put a link in the notes to that podcast, and I hope you do listen. They're very good. Since they finished the Lovecraft canon, they have moved on to other kind of weird fiction stories that they talk about and narrate. I have to admit, I haven't listened to them in quite a while, but they're still going, and they've got a Patreon now, so good for them. You can still access their free stories. It's just obviously not going to be the most immediate or current ones that they're doing. Everyone on Patreon gets that first, obviously. But well-produced. Great podcast. So, what else? We went out this morning for a walk. I'm avoiding it a bit. Oh no, I said the word. Sorry. We went out earlier this morning, and it was beautiful. The trees are in bloom, and the petals are falling into the street, and the dogs are jumping and sniffing and having a ball, and I can't breathe, and I can't see because my eyes are full of water and are red. And we went into a little forest area that we like to go to, and just saw some tiny little bunnies that are, I guess, going to be in the neighborhood for a while. We get quite a bit of wildlife here. I mean, the raccoons and deer and eagles, lots of eagles flying overhead. So my voice is still kind of, I would say, cranky. It's a bit gruff still, and I'm sort of battling through that. I'm still on all the social media, and thank you so much for the new followers. That's fun. Yes, I am still on Twitter, and yes, I am the alien and international ambassador to Earth on Twitter. So I will answer some questions, but not all of them, because there's a lot of top secret information I'm not giving out. But I enjoy the interactions I get there. So, things in the works. Season 7 of Average Joe is in production. And we're going to be taking a summer break because everyone has festivals and conventions that they're either attending or going to be reporting on, writing about, as well as a couple of the writers have book projects in the works. And I've been working on a little script for a short series. I'm just learning how, really. Being in the collective, I'm trying to soak up as much sort of skills as I can. And so I don't know if this little podcast that I'm writing scripts for will ever be produced, but it's a lot of fun. And I'm grateful for the support that they are giving me and advice. Maybe I'll write one, and then maybe another, and then maybe the fifth or seventh one I write will be produced or not. They'll just be found in a big drawer someday after I pass, I suppose. I'm so happy about this particular recording because I did it so fast. I recorded this story in a day. Now, mind you, this story is only 10 pages long. But as I think I've complained about before, my dyslexia tends to make things very long and challenging. I've kind of figured out a couple of tricks to help me shorten the amount of time that I spend in front of the microphone, just doing lines over and over and over. And I find it helps to have all the text in red, strangely, or reading under kind of a red light. I don't know why. I've heard a couple of different tricks from people, so I'm sort of feeling out what will help and what won't. But I'm still reversing letters and words and sentences and ideas. And I think part of that too is I also have another learning disability that's undiagnosed because, anyway, not important. But I recorded this in one day, I edited it in one day, and then today was just some brief sound effects to kind of get you into the story. So basically a two-day project for 10 pages for me is really good. I am improving, and I feel really good about seeing evidence of these improvements. It's giving me hope. Things I'm still working on are my S's. I use Audacity and it has some free plugins. And since the last couple of updates, the plugin basically crashes a lot, constantly, the entire program. I've tried to find other ways of doing it through like compression and figuring out those aspects of the program. But it's a lot of learning, so. And it's not really stuff I enjoy learning. I kind of, in an ideal world, I would sit down in front of my microphone, read the story, not have to stop every 5 seconds. It would come out perfectly. My S's would be under control. My clicking and my weird mouth sounds would be fine. I would be in a soundproof studio. And I wouldn't have to find any of the material. People would just send it to me. But still, I think every aspect of it, actually, I enjoy just a little bit. But there are some I enjoy far more. Okay. I don't know if I'm going to continue doing these little talks at the end. I wanted to try it out and see if I could do something live someday. So I'm sort of getting myself used to the idea of just talking. And I have my little support dog here who's probably been breathing pretty heavily into the mic, but that's okay. He doesn't mind. And I think we're done. Hey? I want to thank you so much for listening to the story. And if you've gotten this far, thank you. Honestly, I really appreciate the people who have subscribed and who listen. I am humbled and I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Until next time, bye for now.
My mother has not been taken by a cartel. My mother has not been taken by a cartel. My mother is fine. There is no Ganymede cartel. My mother has not been taken.